Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
And now, the outgoing New York City Parks Commissioner, Adrian Beneby. You've heard him on the show throughout the 10 years he's been at that post. Yesterday, Mayor Bloomberg announced Beneby's resignation. He joins us now to discuss his tenure at Parks and what's next for him. Commissioner, I can call you that one last time. Welcome back to WNYC.
Well, thank you very much. I'll probably hope to be doing what I'm doing for another couple of months. I can't resist the parks and the pools and the beaches for just one more summer.
You've been the Parks Commissioner for a decade. You were one of Mayor Bloomberg's original appointees, the rare commissioner who stays almost the whole time. Mayor Bloomberg touted your creation of 730 acres of new parkland and 2,000 more acres at Fresh Kills Park on Staten Island still to come. We got the High Line and the Brooklyn Bridge Park under your leadership. But it's also not been without controversy. So first, what are you the most proud of? I know nobody likes to have a favorite child in this respect, but is there anything that for you I'm the commissioner who
I'm going to avoid picking a favorite child. Let's say what I'm most proud of is the fact that, you know, if you look across the five boroughs, there have been dramatic improvements in parks in every neighborhood and waterfront parks built in every borough. So it's just the vast scale of park creation that's unparalleled going back to the 1930s. And the big difference is that we're doing it with city funds here. That was done in the 1930s with federal work relief funds during the Depression. And also the courage of Mayor Bloomberg to continue investing city capital dollars in huge amounts, even in the teeth of the economic recession. You know, the idea that you keep building, this is precisely the time when you build because the city has to remain vital and attractive and with great quality of life.
But it's also not been without controversy. You've sat with us and taken questions about turf fields and privatization. What was the biggest and, in your opinion, most needless controversy?
That's a loaded question because you'd say all controversy is needless. But this is New York. You can't do anything, and I mean anything. I could say I want to give away candy apples to every kid, and there would be six reasons why I shouldn't do that. You know, that you're just going to rot their teeth. You haven't done competitive bids for the candy apples. Where's your environmental impact statement? It's New York. People are going to disagree. And, the media don't write stories that are all happy stories. They want controversy, and that's the way it is. You know, frankly, I think that we've gotten so much done with just a minimum of controversy, and you know where there's people who want to sell stuff in parks and not be restricted in how they sell stuff or whatever it might be. You know, as you go on through this work and as I go on to other work, the controversies really fade, and it's all of the park creations that exist. When we think back to the creation of Central Park and Prospect Park, there were all kinds of controversies. People didn't think you should waste all that much land on a park, and that people were being underpaid or overpaid. But those controversies do not exist today when we think of, you just think about the vision of what was created. And I think what's happened here in New York City is the will of the people saying, we want great parks, we want them across the city, and we're willing to spend money on them. This was not one person's accomplishment, but 8.5 3 million people saying we want to have great parks and speaking through their elected officials and all their community groups and the amazing nonprofit partnerships.
You know, that candy apples to children idea, you think it wouldn't be controversial, but our public health mayor may not be so enamored of it. So on the money, both the High Line and Brooklyn Bridge Parks relied on public-private partnerships reflecting the Bloomberg vision of government, and I guess yours. You've gotten some criticism that you're trying to privatize public space. You've responded to this criticism throughout your tenure. On your way out, do you have any reservations about having embraced the public-private partnerships?
No, and I think that the key is making sure that the public interest is always observed. You know, in every case, whether it's the High Line or Brooklyn Bridge Park, in fact, as coincidence would have it, I'm sitting in the offices of Brooklyn Bridge Park right now. We've just finished a board meeting where votes were taken to advance the development that will make possible the 100 years of insurance for making sure that this beautiful waterfront park is maintained and that the very expensive marine infrastructure continues to be maintained. You know, over the years, the city has not been able to, despite all the best efforts, continue to maintain its infrastructure. There's been periods of dramatic disinvestment. We've done a lot of reinvestment, and you don't want to sort of count on political whims. And if you can set up a reasonable revenue sources to maintain these very expensive waterfront parks that are amenities for the entire city, I think that's not unreasonable. As you look across the country, people are confronting the fact that there isn't enough public money, that you have cities shutting down vital services all across the country. And you can either throw your hands up in despair, or you can wait for elected officials to say, let's raise everyone's taxes, which doesn't seem to be happening around the country. Or you can say, let's do some very creative public-private partnerships. And in New York City, we're really fortunate to have a lot of citizens who not only pay taxes and have jobs, but are willing to join in with nonprofit organizations. And together, these nonprofit organizations raise $160 million in charitable contributions and earned revenue that go into parks. That's the equivalent of almost half of our entire operating budget. And you know, every other city around the country, around the world, is sort of jealous of this tremendous civic activism of citizens in New York who are willing to reach into their pockets and to do all kinds of creative things to make sure that we have, you know, what many people, I think, rightly consider to be one of the finest park systems in the world.
The danger, of course, with relying on public-private partnerships is that the private money always tends to go toward the flashy and the new, the High Line, Central Park Conservancy, the expense budget, which, as you point out, is subject to political whims and public budgeting constraints. Maintenance and operations has been cut by $62 million, almost 17% since 2008. So do you worry that despite your efforts, that the divide between rich and poor when it comes to parks has been exacerbated by the nature of things today?
Well, it's just the opposite, frankly. The fact that you have private citizens and others willing to pay for some basic things like maintenance and programming in some parks allows the city to take its expense dollars and apply them to cities where to parks where that isn't the issue or that isn't the case. You know, the vast majority of parks, and I'd say 90% or more, subsist entirely on city capital dollars and city expense dollars, with, of course, the tremendous contribution of volunteer labor. You know, half of our parks have a volunteer civic organization associated with them. That's been another key to the success of the parks. You know, we've had tremendous leadership from Mayor Bloomberg on the courage to invest almost $5 billion in building new parks. We've had Deputy Mayor Patty Harris's great belief in urban design and beautiful design and public art, and that every park should be beautiful, and we should hire the best possible landscape architects and architects, and have the West Harlem Pierce Park be gorgeous, and the East Harlem waterfront be gorgeous, and the Bronx River waterfront be gorgeous. And we've invested just in the Bronx alone $700 million in building new parks. So I think the risk always is, is there going to be another administration which will unduly cut parks? We've been faced with tremendous, one of the worst economic crises since the Great Depression. And yet the parks, by and large, are in great shape. We have better management. We have a lot of volunteer activity. We've been able to make sure that the average neighborhood park is clean and safe, despite the cuts in the budgets that all the city agencies have had to face. We all hope that the economy turns around and that we'll be able to start hiring again. But in the meantime, we've been able to hold our own, thankfully. And, that can't be said in lots of other communities where parks and facilities are being shut down for lack of money.
We have just a few minutes left with the outgoing New York City Parks Commissioner, Adrian Benepe, who's going on to another job after 10 years on the job. So if you had another 10 years, what would your top priorities be going forward? Or where do you think your successor, Veronica White, should start?
Well, Veronica is really a terrific public servant. She has worked in both in government and in the nonprofit sector, particularly on housing issues. She's worked particularly in the last few years on helping people who need to find work, ex-offenders and disconnected youth find work in very innovative ways, getting private contributions for that. She has a law degree from Harvard University and an international diplomacy degree from Tufts. She's just brilliant.
None of that stuff is a Parks background.
But, you know, I will tell you, I'm the only parks commissioner to have a very strong parks background. I came up through the system. Most of our other parks commissioners, including some brilliant ones, had no parks background when they came in. Commissioner Stern had a year and a half working in the Hoving administration. Gordon Davis, who did a great job, had no previous park background. So it's not a prerequisite to being a parks commissioner, I think. But what do you
need to know?
You know, I think you need to know how to work with people. You need to know, particularly these days, how to work with all of the nonprofit organizations and boards that we work with. You know, I'm on 76 boards. You need to sort of clone yourself just to handle that and work with all these boards. I think the future of the city is very much about sustainable design and making sure that all of the parks and open spaces are not just beautiful landscapes, but are functional ones, that they're functioning as sponges to absorb stormwater runoff so that the water isn't going to the sewers, that they're using recycled materials. We all have to confront the issues of global climate change and rising sea levels. The big Magilla project that remains to be done, that has just gotten started with some projects that are being completed this year, is Fresh Kills. Fresh Kills is for the 21st century what Central Park and Prospect Park were for the 19th century, a 2,000-acre park, a conversion of a landfill, and the ultimate recycled park. And I think that not just this administration in its remaining year and a half, but the future, whoever the next mayors are, will have to continue building Fresh Kills Park and then, you know, looking at what are the other remaining frontiers for park development. But Fresh Kills by itself represents about 15% of the park system, you know, when it's completed.
It's such a weirdly storied position, Parks Commissioner. Robert Moses was the master builder from his perch as Parks Commissioner. Henry Stern, for a while, was as much known for having to kick a homeless encampment out of Tompkins Square Park as for his love of trees. And you've done the various things that you've done. In New York, it's got such a storied history, this particular position.
Well, you know, people in New York, because most of us live stacked up on top of one another in tall apartment buildings or short apartment buildings, we don't have front yards or backyards. The parks are our front yards and backyards. They're our common ground. They're the places for birthday parties and for celebrations, for sadness, for romance, and they are just tremendously important, and they have a rich history. The very first park was the Bowling Green going back to the 1730s, and then the historic squares, Union Square and Washington Square, are first open places, and then the first great purpose-built public park in the world, which is Central Park, and then it's, you know, Prospect Park, which falls on its heels, the parks built during the teeth of the Great Depression when the park system tripled in size. You know, we have a spectacular park system that has gone through periods of boom and bust. But I think what separates now and forever from the past is that there is a level of civic participation and engagement in the life of the parks that will never let it return to where the parks were in the 1970s, the park system I first encountered as a teenage park worker. One slight correction, by the way, in the history, the whole issue over Tompkins Square Park and removing the encampments, that was done under Betsy Gobbaum, who was another terrific parks commissioner under Mayor Dinkins. And I think, you know, Henry Stern's big accomplishments, of course, was this tremendous promotion of trees and green streets and trying to make the city as green as possible, his veneration of trees. And Gordon Davis did some incredibly creative things with management and concessioning out the golf courses and fixing the zoos and appointing, of course, the first urban park rangers, which is how I and a number of the other current park leaders got our starts 33 years ago.
I'll bet you're glad Zuccotti Park is private and not under your jurisdiction last fall.
Well, we get all kinds of stuff. You know, there's never any shortage of controversy because it's New York, and people have just placed such a value on their public spaces, love them. Everyone has his or her own opinion as to what's right. And what I've learned here is that all the opinions are valid, even if you disagree. And I think just trying to keep a cordial dialogue is the most important thing. I've had a lot of fun doing this job, working for, you know, extraordinary people who are the people of New York and the elected leaders and our partners. And Veronica is going to be a terrific replacement. She's a bundle of energy. She's very smart and absolutely dedicated to public service.
30 seconds. Tell us about your new job at the Trust for Public Land.
The Trust for Public Land is a national organization that has helped create a lot of open space across the country. They have a major new direction in terms of helping cities across the country to create urban parks. They believe believe the future of this country is in cities. That's where people will be living, and the future of livable cities is great parks. So I'll be going around the country, seeing what all the different models are in various cities, and seeing how those models can be applied in helping cities do things to make great parks, public-public partnerships, and sustainable design, and all those fun things.
All right. Favorite spot to go to when it's 94 degrees, like tomorrow's supposed to be?
Find a shady bench by a river or other waterfront. You know, there's some spectacular waterfront parks now, and you know, go where the breeze is and where some shade is. Go to a beach. You know, some of my favorite beaches are in Staten Island. Get to one of the Staten Island beaches and find a shady spot. You can go in, and the beaches are open. The pools are not yet open, but all of the spray showers, what we call sprinklers growing up in New York, are open. So if the kids are hot, just get them to a playground. All the spray showers will be turned on, and then, or go to a beach, or just find a shady bench somewhere by a waterfront. And there are so many more waterfront parks now, it shouldn't be too difficult.
The outgoing New York City Parks Commissioner, Adrian Benepe, thank you for all your accessibility over these 10 years and being willing to engage in public dialogue about the controversial stuff as well as the fun stuff. Thank you very much.
It's been a great pleasure, and I'm looking forward to that dialogue and the controversy in many other cities.
Great. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, Barnard College professor Cheryl Mendelson. Her new book is called The Good Life, The Moral Individual in an Anti-Moral World. We'll find out what she means by we're living in an anti-moral world. And also, among other things, hear her argument that it's hard to be moral and cool. Stay tuned.